He looked in my eyes. Whoever took your mom took Taylor. So if we can find one of them, we can find the other. I suddenly had a flash of inspiration. Wait. I think I know where Taylor is. Where? The academy. I ran into my bedroom and found the brochure Taylor had given me from her locker. I brought it back out to the front room and spread it open on the counter. Here. It's got to be the place. Or at least it's connected. Austin looked at the brochure. 513 Allen Avenue, Pasadena, California. He looked up. I think you're right. I'm betting that the Elgin Academy is really just for kids with electrical powers. Austin's logic made sense to me. Why else would they offer a scholarship to me when there were hundreds of kids with better grades? You could be right, I said. Now what? Austin asked. We tell the police, I said. Austin shook his head. No way, they'll never believe us. Why wouldn't they? Think about it. Two teenagers walk into a police station and tell them that a secret agency is kidnapping mothers and cheerleaders? Hearing it like that did sound crazy. But we have proof, I said. No, we have a hunch and some articles on the internet. They'll think we're crazy. And even if we somehow convince them to look into it, this is a multi-billion dollar company. If they find anyone snooping around, they'll just move your mom and Taylor to someplace else, and then we'll have nothing. Austin stood and began to pace. We need to know more about our enemy. But it's not like they're going to have a Facebook profile. Where do we learn more? Clyde, the gunman, I said. But he's in jail. Lieutenant Lloyd could get us to him. Why would he do that? He said their first interrogation was worthless. Maybe I can convince him that I might be more effective. I brought out the card Lieutenant Lloyd had given me. I'm going to call him. I immediately went to the phone and dialed Lloyd's cell phone number. A gruff voice answered.
This is Boyd.
His full name was Boyd Lloyd? No wonder he went by Lieutenant. Lieutenant Lloyd, this is Michael Vey.
Michael, what can I do for you?
I had been so eager to call him that I had dialed without thinking about what I was going to say. I just had a thought. You said you had spoken to the gunman, but he didn't say much.
Nope, he was as tight as pantyhose on a hippo.
I was wondering if maybe he would talk to me.
You want to speak with Clyde?
Well, maybe seeing me might make him talk. There was a long pause.
Frankly, we couldn't do much worse than we did with this last interrogation. Hold on, I'm going to call my partner. May I call you back at this number?
Yes, I said. Bye. I hung up the phone.
What's up?
Austin asked.
Why did you hang up?
He wants to talk to his partner. About 10 minutes later, my phone rang.
Michael, it's Lieutenant Lloyd.
Yes, sir.
I spoke with my partner. He thinks there's a chance it might work. A small chance, but worth trying. So if you're willing to face Clyde, I say let's go for it.
Thank you, sir.
What time are you available?
Any time is good. I'm not back to school yet.
Then how about I pick you up in the morning?
Yes, sir.
I have your address on the police report. I'll come by around 10.
I'll be ready, thank you.
Thank you, Michael. We'll keep our fingers crossed. I'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
I hung up, then turned to Austin.
We're in.
Well done, Austin said. You know, you could always just shot Clyde again.
The man helped kidnap my mother.
Whatever it takes, I said. Whatever it takes. Chapter 23. Clyde. I didn't sleep well that night. I had a nightmare about my mother sitting in a cage at the zoo surrounded by laughing hyenas and calling for me to help her. Austin woke me when he knocked on my door at 7. I answered the door, still in my pajamas. He was dressed for school.
What's up?
I asked groggily.
Not you, he said. My mom told me to come get you for breakfast.
I rubbed my eyes.
Okay, I'll be right there.
I went back to my room and put on my robe, then walked down the hall to the Lisses and let myself in. Breakfast was on the table, and Austin and his father were already eating. Mrs. Liss had made wheat toast with a fried egg in the middle. Mr. Liss was reading the paper and dipped it a little to look at me.
"Good morning, Michael."
"Good morning," I replied.
"That's your plate," Austin said.
I sat down next to him. At the sound of my voice, Mrs. Liss came out of the kitchen.
"Good morning, honey. How did you sleep?"
"Not very well."
"That's understandable. You just make yourself right at home."
I poured myself a glass of orange juice.
"There are hash browns, too," Austin said, pushing a plate my way.
"With cheddar."
"Thanks."
"Is there anything else you want?"
Mrs. Liss asked.
"Do you need some ketchup or Tabasco sauce for your egg?"
"No, I'm good," I said. Mr. Liss glanced at his watch and set down his paper.
"I've got to go."
He stood, looking at us.
"You boys take it easy."
Mr. Liss had an unusually deep voice that made everything he said sound like an order.
"Yes, sir," I said.
"See you, Dad," Austin said.
Mr. Liss grabbed his jacket and keys from the counter, kissed Mrs. Liss, then walked out. When he was gone, Mrs. Liss said,
"I forgot the salt and pepper."
She walked back to the kitchen. Austin said in a hushed voice,
"I wish I could go with you to the police station."
"Me too.
Are you nervous to see him?"
"Yeah." I took a drink of juice. Mrs. Liss walked back in.
"Here you go, darling."
She salt and peppered my egg for me, even though I didn't want it.
"So, Michael, did you feel up to going to school today?"
"Not yet," I said. "Lieutenant Lloyd is going to pick me up at 10. We're going down to the station to talk to the man they put in jail." Her brow furrowed.
"Oh? I didn't know that. Would you like me to go with you?"
"No, I'll be all right."
"How are you on clothes? Do you need some laundry done?"
"I'm okay for now." The truth was, I'd been wearing the same clothes for 3 days.
"Well, whatever you need, just ask. I'll just be your mama until your mama gets back."
"Thank you," I said, grateful for how she'd said it. Austin finished eating, then went and got his backpack.
"I better get going."
I walked to the door with him.
"Good luck,"
he said.
"Bones."
"Bones," I replied. We bumped fists and then he walked off down the hallway. "Thank you for breakfast, Mrs. Liss."
"You're welcome. Please let me know when you get back from the police station."
"Sure thing." I went back to my apartment and showered and dressed. Then it was time to go outside to the parking lot to wait. I was sitting on the curb when Lieutenant Lloyd pulled up in his police cruiser. He rolled down his window.
"Good morning, Michael."
The morning sun was high above the mountains, and I shielded my eyes with both my hands.
"Hi."
"How are you?"
I shrugged. I know he was just being friendly, but it was kind of a stupid question. "I've been better." He nodded sympathetically.
"Come sit in the front seat."
I climbed into the car, put on my seatbelt, and we drove downtown. The drive to the jail took about 20 minutes. I was ticking a lot. Lieutenant Lloyd didn't say anything about it, but I'm pretty sure he noticed because he asked me again if I really wanted to do this. I guess taking a minor into the jail is pretty unusual, and he was probably having second thoughts about it. I told him I was positive it was the right thing. When we arrived at the jail, I went through all the security, metal detectors and all, then followed Lieutenant Lloyd down a long corridor, passing other police officers on the way. At the end of the hall were two doors. He led me through the door on the left into a darkened room.
"This is the observation room," he explained. "This is where we watch what's going on in the interrogation room."
There was a large two-way mirror, as well as two monitors mounted to a console. The gunman, Klein, was sitting in a chair on the other side of the glass, his hands handcuffed behind his back. Seeing him filled me with anger.
"This is Detective Muir,"
Lieutenant Lloyd said, gesturing to a man sitting in front of the bank of monitors.
"He'll be recording everything."
I turned back. "You record what happens inside?"
"Every word,"
he said. I hadn't thought about that. I wouldn't be able to speak freely. Lieutenant Lloyd looked into my eyes.
You're still sure you want to do this?
I'm sure, I said.
You're a brave young man, he said.
Okay, then.
We have Stewart in handcuffs, but if you feel threatened at all, let me know.
He patted his gun belt.
I have my taser.
Me too, I thought. I'm ready. As we started to walk out, I brushed by the recording console and pulsed. Suddenly, all the screens in the room went blank.
Wait, Muir said. We just went down.
Lieutenant Lloyd groaned.
What timing.
It's like we got a power surge or something, Detective Muir said, flipping a few switches. He spent the next 5 minutes trying to get the system back up. Finally, Lieutenant Lloyd asked,
Does the phone still work?
Yes.
We'll use the intercom on it. We won't be able to tape it, but at least we'll hear what's going on.
We walked back out to the hallway. Lieutenant Lloyd unlocked and opened the interrogation room door, and we stepped inside. The room was rectangular, with bare white cinderblock walls. Clyde sat at the opposite end of a long wooden table. He wore an orange jail jumpsuit with the name Stewart, and a number printed above the left breast.
Hello, Clyde, Lieutenant Lloyd said.
Stewart didn't look at Lieutenant Lloyd, but glared at me.
Sure you remember who this is?
He said nothing.
Let me help you remember.
This is Michael Vey. He's the son of the woman you helped kidnap. He scowled.
I know who he is.
Good.
Because you owe him an explanation.
Clyde turned his body sideways.
I don't owe him nothing.
Lieutenant Lloyd shook his head. He whispered to me.
Like I said, he's not cooperating.
Maybe if I talked to him alone. He thought about it for a moment, then said,
I was afraid it might come to that.
He walked up to Clyde.
I'm leaving Michael alone with you.
Don't try anything crazy. Suddenly, Clyde's expression changed from anger to fear.
No! You can't leave him alone with me! I have rights against cruel and inhumane punishment! I have rights!
Lloyd looked at him like he was crazy.
I was saying I'm leaving him alone with you. But I'm watching you carefully through the glass, so don't get any ideas.
Lieutenant Lloyd turned back to me and shook his head.
Be careful, he whispered. The man's nutty as a bag of trail mix. Good luck.
When the door shut, Clyde looked up at me and our eyes met. Where's my mother? His lips pursed. I stood up and took a few steps toward him. I knew the police were listening, so I chose my words carefully.
Do you need something to jog your memory?
You stay away from me, electric boy!
What did you call me?
I know all about your kind, you glowing freaks.
My kind?
He scowled.
Yeah, your kind.
For the first time, I noticed the scars running up his arm. He followed my gaze, then looked back up at me.
Yeah, that's from one of you. You glows all alike.
How many are there of us?
Too many. One of you is too many.
I only did what I did because you pulled a gun on my mother.
You made me do it.
That's because they made me do it.
Who made you?
He didn't answer. You know, I can reach you from here, I said, which wasn't true, but he didn't know it. He sneered at me, then said,
Hatch.
What's a hatch?
Hatch isn't a what, you idiot. He's a who.
Who is Hatch? He didn't answer.
Is Hatch the guy with the sunglasses?
They're not sunglasses. It's how he sees the glows. He said the word as if it were bitter on his tongue.
What's a glow?
You're a glow. Who are those other two kids with him?
Glows. Zeus and Nichelle.
I saw what Zeus does. What does Nichelle do?
She's Hatch's protection against glows.
His face bent in a dark grin.
Oh, you're gonna like her. Trust me. She's the nastiest of the whole stinking nasty bunch of you.
How long have they known about me?
Since you were a baby. They just couldn't find you. You and the other.
I guessed he was talking about Taylor.
Where is she? You have to ask Hatch.
Where did they take my mother?
How would I know that? They left me.
Where did they plan to take my mother?
You'll never find her, he said,
and a dark smile crossed his face.
You have no idea what you're up against, glowworm. They have private jets and hidden compounds. They're all over the world. Your mother could be anywhere by now.
Where is Hatch?
He looked away.
Where is Hatch? I said louder. I began rubbing the table. Do you need some persuasion?
What are you gonna do, kill me?
You'd be doing me a favor. They're gonna kill me anyway, you'll see. To them, we're all expendable. Even the glows.
I decided to change my tactic. If I can stop Hatch, he interrupted me with laughter.
Ha! You think you can stop Hatch?
The U.S. Marine Corps couldn't stop Hatch.
If I can stop Hatch,
I'll be able to prove that they forced you into this. Help me find my mother, and I promise I'll testify for you and get you out of here.
Clyde's laughter only increased. You think I want to go out there with them? I'm safer in here.
I leaned forward and whispered, Is Hatch at the school in Pasadena?
He looked down.
Is Hatch at the school in Pasadena? I repeated. Without looking up, he said, It's not a school.
Is that where he is?
He looked up. You'll find out soon enough. I looked at him for another moment, then over at the mirror.
I'm done,
I said. When I turned back, Clyde was smiling.
Hatch is waiting for you, you know. He's been waiting a long, long time. He really wants you.
Just then the door opened and Lieutenant Lloyd walked in.
All right, Clyde.
You know who this kid is, don't you?
Clyde shouted.
He's a glow. He can shock you worse than that taser you're wearing. He can kill you. He can kill all of us. They're gonna take over.
I looked up at Lloyd and shrugged.
Shut up, Lieutenant Lloyd said.
They're gonna take over the entire world.
Save it for the judge, Lieutenant Lloyd said.
As I walked out of the room, Lieutenant Lloyd put his arm on my shoulder.
Sorry, kid. That's what I was afraid of.
Ever since we brought him in, he's been ranting about hatches and glowworms. He shook his head.
The man's insane.
Chapter 24. Jack. Austin came to my apartment directly from school. I was on my knees filling my backpack with clothes.
What are you doing?
Packing. They're in Pasadena.
Clyde told you that?
Sort of. The man in the sunglasses is named Hatch.
Hatch?
And you were right. There are more of us electric children.
Did the police hear all that?
Yeah, but they just think Clyde's crazy. Austin sat on my bed.
So now what?
I'm going to Pasadena.
Well, how do we do that?
What do you mean, we? I said.
You can't go alone. What if you need help?
This isn't a video game, Austin. It's real danger. If something goes wrong, we can't just push a reset button.
Which is precisely why I need to go.
What good is being here without my best friend? I looked at him. Thanks.
So, how do we get there?
Jack. Austin's eyes widened.
Jack the bully?
Yeah, he's perfect. He's got his own car.
There's no way my mom will let me go with him driving.
Your mom can't know.
You're right. She'd freak no matter what.
He looked down.
What makes you think Jack will drive us?
He owes me. I rubbed my hands together, and they made the crackling sound of electricity. I think I can persuade him.
Chapter 25. Tara. Taylor was sitting on her bed eating supper when she heard her door unlock. A voice from a speaker said, Enter. The door opened, and Tara walked into the room. She was smiling.
You finally got some food, huh?
Taylor looked up. In spite of her mistrust of the place, she felt a natural kinship to Tara.
Yeah. What's with all the bananas? high in potassium. It's good for us.
She shook her head and her smile grew.
Crazy, huh? You must feel like you fell down the rabbit hole.
The rabbit hole?
You know, Alice in Wonderland. But really, it's not as bad as you think. I've been kidnapped, tied up, tortured by some deranged goth chick, and locked in a cell. And you say it's not so bad? You're right. Nichelle's pretty awful, isn't she?
She swayed a little.
As far as the cell, it's just temporary. It's just until you see that they mean you no harm. They have a lot of experience with this.
Kidnapping? Taylor asked. Tara shook her head.
Look, sis, I understand why you're so upset. I really do.
She walked over and sat on the bed next to her.
And I'm sorry if I don't seem more sympathetic. But I'm just so happy you're here. My own sister. I've waited for this day for so long. How long have you known you're a twin?
Taylor asked.
9 years. Since Dr. Hatch found me. He promised me that someday he'd find you. And he did. I didn't even know I had a sister. It's kind of cool, isn't it?
Taylor pushed away her tray.
I'm sorry, I'm just scared and I don't know what I'm doing here. I really do understand, Tara said. But it'll be okay. Trust me. They just want to know why we're so different. The research they do here will save millions of lives someday. And they take really good care of us. Really good care. We even have our own concierge service. What's that? You know, like at fancy hotels? You can ask for pretty much anything, and they'll get it for you. Clothes, front row concert tickets and backstage passes, gadgets, almost anything, within reason. I mean, if you asked for a jet, they'd probably say no. But I asked for a diamond bracelet once, and they got me one.
Why would they do all that?
Because we're the special ones. Out of billions of people in this world, there are only 17 of us. Well, actually 13 of us now.
Taylor wondered what she had meant by that.
We're like royalty. Try it. Just ask for anything.
Okay. I want to go home. Tara sighed.
Except that. Taylor, give it a couple of weeks. If you're still so unhappy, then I'm sure they'll let you go.
Taylor looked at her with surprise.
Really? Of course. I don't have a lock on my door. I come and go as I wish. The thing is, they have to protect themselves, too. They have a lot of money invested in all this, and they're working with kids. It's a big risk. Does that make sense?
Taylor looked down for a moment.
Yeah, I guess it does. But then why did they kidnap me? They didn't want to. They invited you to come to the Elgin Academy, didn't they? And everything they promised was true. The best schooling and the college of your choice. In fact, when you turn 16, you can have any car you want. A Ferrari, a Rolls Royce, Maserati, anything. But your adopted parents wouldn't let you go, would they?
No.
They don't even know about your powers, do they?
No.
Exactly. They have no idea how special you are. How do you know all this?
Because you're my sister.
Her eyes moistened with emotion.
I've waited a long, long time for you.
Taylor felt a little better.
So, are you electric?
She nodded.
Of course. What can you do? Well, we're twins, so my powers are like yours, but a little more refined. I've had years to practice them here.
She sat back on the bed.
Okay. Want to see something?
Sure.
Okay. Here goes.
Tara closed her eyes.
Suddenly, Taylor felt a warm rush of happiness flow through her.
Taylor laughed.
How did you do that? Cool, isn't it?
I've learned to stimulate the part of the brain that produces serotonin. Kind of a happy drug. I can also do the opposite, but you don't want to feel that.
What do you mean the opposite?
I can make you feel the negative emotions, like rage or incredible fear.
How much fear?
black widows crawling all over your body fear. Taylor bristled. Like I said, you don't want to feel that. Taylor shook her head. No, I'll pass on that.
You'll learn too.
Part of our education at the Academy is working with scientists to develop our powers. They've also found that eating certain things enhance our abilities. Like bananas? Taylor asked.
Yeah.
You can have all the banana shakes you want. Banana cream pie, banana smoothies, the list goes on. Also, minerals help. We take special supplements 3 times a day. We also avoid refined sugar. It gets in the way of things. Once I gave up soda pop for a month, I doubled my stretch.
Stretch?
That's some of the jargon they use here. You'll learn it. Stretch is how far you can push your powers. One boy here has such a powerful stretch, he can reach airplanes.
What does he do to airplanes? Taylor asked.
Tara shook her head.
Nothing,
she said.
So, can you read minds? Taylor asked.
Tara's expression fell.
No. Can you read minds?
Her reaction worried Taylor.
No. I mean, I just thought with what you can do, you might be able to.
No. None of us can read minds. I think Dr. Hatch would freak out if someone could.
I mean, just imagine what they could do.
Taylor nodded.
What about Nichelle?
Tara grimaced.
No one here likes Nichelle. She's a beast.
Just stay close to Dr. Hatch, and she'll keep her distance. She used her powers on me once, and Dr. Hatch disciplined her.
Why didn't you just do something to her?
Our powers don't work on her. She's like a vampire. She sucks our power.
That's what she told me.
Yeah, she thinks it's cool. She's such a loser. The thing is, around us she's powerful, but in the outer world she's nothing. Like kryptonite can kill Superman, but you and I could wear it for jewelry. In the outer world, she's just another goth. Anyway, it's against the rules to use our powers without Dr. Hatch's permission. And we're never allowed to use our powers on each other. Just the GPs.
What's a GP?
You'll find out.
What time is it anyway?
It's around 10. Bedtime. So you better get some good rest. We have a busy day tomorrow.
Doing what?
She stood.
I don't want to ruin the surprise. But trust me, you're gonna love it.
She leaned forward and kissed Taylor on the forehead.
Sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite.
She walked out, and the door clicked locked behind her. Taylor lay back on her bed and looked up at the camera's blinking red light. Wasn't worried about the bed bugs, she thought. Chapter 26. Harry Winston. Taylor only knew it was morning because a nasal voice over the room's speaker told her it was time to wake up. She was still lying in bed when the lock clicked and Tara walked in. Her arms were full of clothing. Get up, sleepyhead! Taylor sat up, rubbing her eyes.
I didn't sleep much last night.
Well, you'll have to nap later, because right now we have a lot of fun to get to. She laid the pile of clothes at the foot of Taylor's bed. Fortunately, we wear the same size and everything, so you can borrow my things for now. Taylor looked down at her smock.
You mean, I don't have to wear this thing?
Tara stared at her.
You're kidding me, right?
Taylor shrugged.
I don't know.
Wow, you've got this place all wrong. This isn't a prison. That's just an examination smock. We all wore them on our first day when they were establishing baselines. But that was yesterday. Today's your lucky day. Dr. Hatch had to take you shopping for a new wardrobe. And guess where? Taylor shrugged. The Miracle Mile.
Huh?
Rodeo Drive, Beverly Hills. Heard of it? If you're anything like me, and you are going to have the time of your life.
I don't have any money, Taylor said.
Tara laughed. You don't need money here. Now, get dressed. Taylor looked through the clothes Tara had brought. None of them looked as if they'd even been worn.
Wow. These are some expensive brands.
She picked up a pair of jeans. You can keep whatever you like. I'll just get more. Actually, you'll get whatever you need today. Tara held up a blouse. I love this one. It looks great with our complexion. Do you like it?
Yeah.
Try it on. Ignoring the video cameras, Taylor slipped off the smock and put on the blouse.
You look ridiculously beautiful, Tara said. You're the most beautiful girl in this place.
She laughed.
Well, that's kind of like complimenting myself, isn't it?
Taylor grinned.
Yeah, it is.
After Taylor was dressed, the two girls walked outside the cell to an elevator. Tara put her finger on a fingerprint sensor pad. The screen turned green, and the elevator door slid open.
We'll stop by the cafeteria and get some breakfast on the way out, Tara said.
She pushed the button for floor one, and they ascended two levels to the main floor.
This way to the cafeteria, she said.
The cafeteria looked less like a school cafeteria than a restaurant in a fancy hotel. They were met at the door by the restaurant's maitre d', a short Italian man with silver hair and a black tuxedo.
Good morning, ladies. You both look bellissima.
Yes, we do, Tara said. Thank you for noticing.
Thank you, Taylor said.
What will it be today? Crab Benedict and banana and candied walnut oatmeal are today's chef's specials.
I just want a banana smoothie, Tara said. We're in a hurry.
I guess me too, Taylor said.
Will you be having that to go then?
Yes, Tara said. And fast.
Yes, very well.
He ran back through the kitchen doors, and just a few minutes later, a waiter brought out their smoothies in plastic goblets with small silver spoons. Tara took both glasses and handed one to Taylor.
Let's go, sis. We're burning daylight.
Where are we going?
I already told you.
Shopping.
Outside?
Well, duh. Taylor looked around.
No one is going to stop me from leaving?
Why would they do that?
Dr. Hatch said...
Oh, Tara interrupted.
That reminds me. Dr. Hatch is going to meet up with us a little later.
He said he has a surprise for you.
Her eyebrows rose.
So get excited. His surprises are epic. He doesn't do things small.
Taylor followed her out the front door. It was the first time Taylor had seen the sun for several days.
Her instinct told her to bolt, but she was still surrounded by fences, and Tara's happiness and reassurances had calmed her some. A Rolls-Royce Phantom was waiting for them at the curb. The driver stood at the back door, holding it open for them.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Griff, Tara said.
Good morning, Taylor said.
Welcome to the Academy, Taylor, the driver said. My name is Griffin. If I can do anything to make your day more pleasant, please let me know.
Taylor wondered how he knew her name.
The two girls climbed into the back seat.
Taylor had never been in such a luxurious car. The interior was all leather, glass, and highly polished burled wood.
A glass partition separated them from the driver. In the center console was a telephone.
Taylor's heart jumped.
Can I call my parents?
Tara shook her head.
We'll have to ask Dr. Hatch, but it's probably too soon. There's still too much of that still in you.
Too much of what? Taylor asked.
Tara pointed to the world outside the compound.
That.
The drive from Pasadena to the palm tree-lined streets of Beverly Hills was only 25 minutes. It was a bright day, and the sidewalks were crowded with both the glamorous and those seeking it. Griffin parked the Rolls in a reserved spot on South Santa Monica Boulevard, then followed a few yards behind the girls as they shopped.
Why is he following us? Taylor asked.
Duh, Tara said. Someone's got to carry our bags.
Rodeo Drive started at the Beverly Hills Hotel and stretched on for nearly a mile. Tara explained that the district took up 3 city blocks and had over 100 boutiques, hotels, and salons. Every fashion designer worth visiting had a shop in the neighborhood. In the first block, they passed stores Taylor had only heard of. Lacoste,
Juicy Couture, Chanel, Hugo Boss, and Giorgio Armani. Tara pulled Taylor toward Juicy Couture, a tall glass store with a window display of mannequins in jewel-studded tracksuits with purses patterned with Couture's trademark crown slung over their shoulders. Tara wanted to look at the swimsuits and pulled a floral print tankini from the rack.
What do you think of this?
Taylor looked at the price tag. $230 for a bathing suit? Tara shrugged. I know, a bargain, right? They crossed Brighton Way and continued down Rodeo Drive. Tara pulled Taylor into Salvatore Ferragamo. At Tara's insistence, Taylor selected a pair of sunglasses in red, and Tara got the same ones in purple. Outside a store called Dolce & Gabbana, Tara squealed.
They have their new collection in. Come on!
A woman standing near the front of the store smiled as the girls entered.
There are two of you. Which one of you lovely ladies is Tara?
I'm Tara, Tara said, curtsying. This is my twin, Taylor.
Twice the charm. It's such a pleasure meeting you, Taylor. How may we serve you, ladies?
We're here to dress Taylor up, Tara said. Our pleasure.
The woman snapped her fingers in the air.
Mark, bring Tara and Taylor some sparkling water.
She turned back to the girls, smiling unctuously.
This way, please.
Taylor whispered to Tara.
She knows you?
Of course. I'm one of her best customers.
The woman led them to dressing rooms, where her staff delivered outfit after outfit of gorgeous fabrics and light dresses. They spent more than $5,000, and the sales ladies waved happily to them as they walked out, the girls' arms heavy with shopping bags, which they surrendered to Griffin. Taylor trailed behind Tara all morning as they walked through Tara's favorite stores. Bibi, Gucci, Chanel. Even though they were the identical age, Taylor thought Tara acted more like a 21-year-old than a 15-year-old. She knew her way around the stores, and if they didn't already know her, all she had to do was say that she was with the Elgin Academy, and the employees tripped over each other to help them. At Tara's urging, Taylor purchased 9 pairs of jeans, 6 skirts, 4 pairs of shoes, 8 shirts, 2 leather jackets, and 3 bags of accessories. Just for fun, Tara picked out 3 identical outfits. Taylor was nervous about all the money they were spending. She had once used her mother's credit card to download an album without asking, and she'd been grounded for a week.
"Whose credit card are we using?" Taylor asked.
Tara held it up.
"American Express Black Card. It's mine. I just have to ask first. But they've never turned me down. I think it has like a $200,000 limit."
Taylor's jaw dropped.
"You've got to be kidding."
"Nope. Far cry from Preston Street, huh?"
Taylor looked at her.
"How do you know where I live?"
"I asked, of course."
Tara smiled.
"Sis, you just don't understand how excited I've been to have you here. You coming home is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me."
The way Tara said home scared her. Taylor wasn't sure how to respond to Tara's excitement. Finally, she just said,
"Thank you."
A few minutes later, Taylor was looking at a diamond necklace displayed in the window of Tiffany & Company when Tara said,
"Dr. Hatch said not to buy any jewelry."
"I was just looking."
"No problem," she said.
"He'll be here soon anyway. He wanted to meet us around 1, which is,"
she looked at her watch,
"almost a half hour from now.
Are you ready for a break?"
Taylor nodded.
"Good, because I want to show you something."
Tara led her to Via Rodeo, where they wandered through the cobblestone roads, pausing at the fountains and wrought iron lamps and arches. Griffin still followed, but at a distance.
"This is so beautiful," Taylor said.
"It's European," Tara explained.
"Have you ever seen the real thing, Europe?"
"No, someday."
Taylor's parents had promised to take her on a tour of Europe the summer after she graduated from high school, something that even with her mother's professional discounts, they'd still have to save and sacrifice for. Thinking of her parents made her heart ache. Tara touched her shoulder.
"No?
You will. You are going to love our vacations."
They walked past a crowd of tourists posing in front of a fountain,
and crossed the street toward the Beverly Wilshire.
Are you having fun?
Taylor nodded, even though she was still afraid.
Told you you'd like it.
Only one thing I'm disappointed about. I usually see celebrities. I guess you can't have everything. Before Taylor could respond, Tara asked, Are you hungry yet? Taylor figured they had spent more than $10,000 on clothes.
Are you sure we're not going to get in trouble for spending so much?
We might get in trouble for not spending enough.
This is what we're supposed to do.
I just can't believe this, Taylor said, feeling confused.
Believe it.
It's the way it is all the time. Dr. Hatch always says special people should have special things.
Her face lit.
You like sushi, don't you?
I'm not sure. I've never had it. But I've always wanted to try it.
I've got a place for you. They walked a couple of blocks to a Japanese restaurant, Urasawa. The restaurant's lobby was crowded, and Tara pushed her way to the hostess counter, which embarrassed Taylor immensely.
A table for three,
Tara said. The hostess, a middle-aged Japanese woman, looked at her dully.
Do you have reservations?
No,
Tara said confidently.
We're with the Elgin Academy.
The woman slightly bowed.
My apologies. Gomenasai. Right this way.
She whispered into a nearby waitress's ear, then grabbed the menus, and immediately led Tara and Taylor to a table near the back of the restaurant.
We reserve this table for celebrities, the woman said. Welcome to Urasawa.
As they sat down, a kimono-clad waitress brought out a plate of gyoza.
This is amazing, Taylor said.
I can't believe they just let us in. Tara looked at the menu.
Of course they did.
Taylor looked at the empty seat.
Is Griffin going to eat with us?
Tara crinkled her nose.
No. Why would he do that?
Then who's the third seat for?
Hopefully that seat would be for me, Dr. Hatch said.
He was standing next to the table, dressed casually in light slacks and a polo shirt. Tara smiled.
Hello, Dr. Hatch.
Taylor bristled at the sight of him, but faked a smile.
May I join you? He asked.
Of course, Tara said.
He pulled out a chair and sat down.
So, how goes the shopping? Having fun?
We've spent about $10,000 so far, Tara said.
Only ten? Hatch said. Come on, girls, you need to pick up the pace. Shop like you mean it.
Taylor looked at him in wonderment. Dr. Hatch lifted a pair of chopsticks and helped himself to one of the dumplings.
Mmm, he said. Fabulous.
The waitress returned with a large platter of sushi, tempura, and yakiniku. The waitress bowed to Dr. Hatch.
Dr. Hatch, yukoso. Domo arigato gozaimasu.
Tara and Dr. Hatch attacked the food, while Taylor fumbled with her chopsticks.
This is great sushi, Tara said. Not as good as that place we ate in Tokyo last summer, but it's still good.
Kyube, Hatch said.
Wonderful restaurant. One of the few places that still serves pufferfish.
You went to Tokyo? Taylor asked.
Oh yeah, we go everywhere. Last year the family went on a trip to Japan, Beijing, Hong Kong, and Taiwan.
I've always wanted to travel, Taylor said.
Dr. Hatch handed Taylor a fork.
Chopsticks can be such a bother. Please enjoy.
The unagi is especially delicious. Taylor speared a piece.
What's this?
Eel, Tara said.
It's my favorite.
Taylor took a tiny bite while Tara and Hatch watched her expectantly.
What do you think? Hatch asked.
It looks gross, but it's pretty good.
Hatch smiled.
Things aren't always what they seem, he said.
Taylor sensed he wasn't talking about food.
Bet you didn't have sushi this good in Idaho, Tara said.
I didn't have it at all. Sushi's kind of expensive.
That's too bad, Tara said. It's not a big deal, Taylor said defensively.
It's just food.
Taylor's right, Hatch said. It is just food. And besides, want is a thing of the past. He smiled at her.
From now on, you're going to experience things you've only dreamed of.
And you're going to travel to places you've only imagined.
Bali, Nepal, Moscow, Paris, Rome, and that's just the beginning. We have a student traveling right now from London to Dubai. It's a brave new world, Taylor. A brave new world with endless opportunities. He gestured with his chopsticks. Think of it. Every day, billions of people wake up to lives of desperation. Some just hoping to survive another miserable day. Those few with enough to eat are hoping their lives might mean something. Hoping their dreams and existence won't just blow away with the sands of time. But not you. Not anymore. What we do at the Academy, what you do as one of the chosen, will endure. Someday people will read books about you. You will be talked about and discussed just like the early pioneers and explorers in today's textbooks. You are Christopher Columbus, Marco Polo, and Neil Armstrong, all in one. Why would they talk about me? Taylor asked. Because you are a pioneer in a very real sense. You are the prototype of the next great species. You will be more famous than you can possibly imagine. Taylor didn't know what to say. She had always wanted to be famous. After another half hour, Hatch said, "Are you girls almost done eating? Because I have a surprise for Taylor." Tara smiled. "Lucky girl. Dr. Hatch has the best surprises." "Are you ready?" Hatch asked. "I guess so," Taylor said. Hatch stood and raised his hand. The waitress rushed over. "Hi, sir." "Put it on our tab. 30% tip." "Yes, sir. Thank you, sir." They walked out of the restaurant. A black Cadillac Escalade with tinted windows was idling out front. Two black-suited men with ear radios and aviator sunglasses stood next to the car. Hatch waved to them. "We're just going to walk. It's only a few blocks from here." "What's a few blocks?" Taylor asked. "Have you ever heard of Harry Winston?" Hatch asked. "Harry Winston the jeweler?" "Exactly," he said, looking impressed. "How do you know Harry Winston?" "It's in that song, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. They say, 'Talk to me, Harry Winston.'" Dr. Hatch laughed. "Brava! Very good, Taylor. You're much too young to know that, though." "My mom liked that song. I mean, likes that song." It bothered her that she had used the past tense. Hatch nodded. "Did you know that Harry Winston acquired, then gave away the most famous diamond in history? It's called the Hope Diamond, and it's more than 45 carats. Today it's on display at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. What's most impressive to me is that not only did he acquire a gem once owned by King Louis XIV, but he also had the guts to cut it. He had the courage to improve it. That's how you make history. You cut against the rough." He looked up. "And here we are," he said, raising his hands. The store was composed of smooth gray stone. A simple brass sign out front read HW, and below that, Harry Winston. A man opened the door for them. "Hello, Dr. Hatch." Hatch waved the girls ahead. "Ladies, after you." Taylor had never been in such a luxurious place before. The floors were carpeted in rich chocolate hues, and the walls were a dark mahogany. It was cool inside and windowless, the room lit by large wall lamps. The atmosphere was hushed, as if they'd entered a museum or library. "This is the place to buy jewelry. It's where the stars come when they're up for an Oscar," Tara said. "And you," Hatch said to Taylor, "are a star." An older gentleman with silver hair whisked across the room to greet them.
"Ah, Dr. Hatch," he said with a French accent. "It's so good to see you again. I have the necklaces you requested right over here."
"Thank you. Tara, I'm going to spend a little time with Taylor. Why don't you find yourself some earrings?"
"Yes, sir."
"This way, Taylor," Hatch said. The jeweler led them to a small private room. In the center of the room, there was a round, polished marble desk with a mirror and a magnifying glass.
"Shall I bring in a preliminary selection?"
"Please," Hatch said, matching the Frenchman's formal tone and winking at Taylor.
The man nodded and left the room. He returned a moment later carrying three boxes, which he laid reverently in front of Taylor, lifting the lids off one by one.
I would like to show you a sampling from our classic selection. First, the loop necklace.
He held it out for her to examine.
This elegant piece is made up of 358 round diamonds. It is immaculate.
It's beautiful, Taylor said. Would you like to see it on? Hatch asked.
Really? Sure.
Taylor held her hair off her neck while the jeweler placed the necklace on her. He fastened the necklace, then slid a small oval mirror across the table toward her so she could look at herself. The necklace felt heavy and cool. Each diamond glistened like it was on show.
Wow.
She touched the necklace. She couldn't believe she was wearing it. Show her the next one, Hatch said.
The next one? Taylor asked.
The man nodded as he unclasped the necklace Taylor was wearing.
Certainly. The baby wreath necklace consists of 117 round and marquee cut diamonds for a total of 25 carats. The pendant is set in platinum.
The necklace was shorter and thicker, the diamonds set in an intricate pattern of holly-shaped links.
Do you like it? Hatch said.
It's cool, Taylor said. And the one I've saved for last. Nightlife. Made up of 60 rounds and pear-shaped diamonds for a total of 13 carats with a platinum setting.
Taylor gasped when she saw it. The brilliant diamonds hung from a delicate-looking platinum chain, the different diamond cuts alternating in a stunning pattern. Hatch turned to Taylor. Anything stand out? Taylor smiled in spite of herself.
This one. Definitely.
She touched the necklace delicately. The jeweler nodded approvingly.
A beautiful piece, he said.
We'd like to try it on, please, Hatch said. The man lifted the necklace out of its case and handed it to Hatch. Hatch put it around Taylor's neck. The white diamonds glistened against her tan skin like they were alive. Taylor had never seen anything so beautiful in her life. She wondered what her friends would think if they saw her now. But rather than joy, the thought brought her sadness. She missed her friends, and she felt guilty for enjoying herself. What do you think? Hatch asked.
It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
How much is this trinket? He asked.
Just a minute, sir.
He turned over the tag.
That piece is $168.
$168? Taylor asked. The jeweler almost choked. No, Hatch said. $168,000. Taylor suddenly felt very uncomfortable.
That's like wearing a house.
Fortunately, not quite as heavy, Hatch said, smiling. But do you like it?
Of course, it's incredible.
Good. Then it's yours. She looked up at him in amazement.
What?
It's our welcome home gift to you. Taylor was speechless.
You're kidding.
Hatch put his hand on her arm, touching her bare skin. I would never kid about something as important as that. We are so glad you've come home. As he spoke, his thoughts coursed through Taylor's mind. A chill rose up her spine and the depth of the darkness filled her with such terror she was suddenly nauseous. Taylor shuddered and pulled away. Hatch looked at her curiously. Are you okay? Taylor swallowed.
Sorry, I guess I'm not used to sushi.
He nodded.
Of course. It's an acquired taste.
Would you like the necklace wrapped up, or will you be wearing it out?
The jeweler asked. Hatch looked at Taylor.
Taylor?
Taylor unfastened the necklace.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful, sir, but you've already done enough. I'm really not used to all this.
I understand. He turned to the man and handed back the necklace.
Put this on hold. The young lady would like to think about it.
Very well, sir, he said,
disappointment evident in his voice. He returned the jewelry to the display case.
Can we just go back? Taylor asked.
Absolutely. You came in the rolls?
Yes, Taylor said.
Hatch took out his phone and pushed a button on it.
Pick us up outside Harry Winston. He slid the phone back in his pocket. Come on, Tara. Tara took off the pearl earrings she was trying on and said to the woman helping her,
Sorry, out of time.
The three of them walked outside, where the Rolls was waiting for them. The black Escalade was parked behind it. Griffin opened the door and Taylor climbed in first. Hatch sat down next to her. Tara sat in the front next to the driver. Hatch said,
You know, Taylor, everyone in the family is very excited to meet you.
Taylor swallowed. Then she forced out,
I'm looking forward to meeting them as well.
I hoped you'd say that. Because I've asked the chef to prepare a special dinner in your honor. A personal favorite of mine, beef Wellington. I hope your stomach is a little more agreeable with that than the sushi.
I was raised on casseroles and pizza. I'm afraid I'm just kind of an average girl.
Hatch frowned.
No, Taylor. You're anything but average.
His expression lightened.
But don't worry.
We're not all China and Crystal. We eat pizza and hamburgers, too. However, tonight is a very special occasion and requires a special cuisine. He leaned back and smiled. The lost daughter has returned. Chapter 27 Hitching a Ride. Jack lived about 12 blocks from my home, in a poor neighborhood. I found his address in the school directory, then went to see him. Jack's house was at the end of a short, dead-end road called Leslie Street, an aged box of a home with chipped aluminum siding and faded cloth awnings. The front window had been broken and was covered with cardboard that was kept in place with duct tape. The yard was overgrown with weeds and pyracantha bushes. There were at least 6 cars at the house, some of them parked on the grass or on the road in front, most with flat tires and rusted bodies. Only 1 or 2 of them looked like they might actually run. I climbed 3 steps to the astroturf-covered porch. The doorbell had yellowed masking tape over it with the word broke written in marker. I opened the rusted screen door and knocked on the wood door behind it. A minute or so later, Jack answered. He was wearing a t-shirt with the sleeves cut off, exposing his muscular arms and shoulders as well as his tattoo. I forced myself not to blink.
What do you want?
He asked.
I need to talk to you.
I'm listening. The TV was blaring behind him, and I wondered if someone else was inside.
Not here. I need to talk to you someplace more private.
Why?
I just do.
He looked at me for a moment, then stepped out on the front porch, shutting the door behind him.
Go ahead. My old man can't hear you.
I need a ride.
You think I'm your chauffeur now?
To Pasadena. His face looked even more distressed.
Isn't that like in California?
Yeah.
Man, what is this, a shakedown? I went to Dahlstrom like you said. I'm not gonna let you keep bullying me.
I'll go to the teachers and tell them what you did.
Calm down, I said. I'm not here to bully you. You're the only one I can go to with this.
Why not your old man?
I don't have a father.
Then your mother?
Don't you watch the news?
No.
My mother was kidnapped. I'm pretty sure she's in Pasadena. That's why I need a ride there.
Why don't you call the police?
It's complicated. They can't help.
Dude, I'm not driving all the way to California.
I reached into my pocket and pulled out a wad of bills I had taken from Mom's secret stash.
Look, I've got money. I'll pay you $300. It's all I've got.
He eyed the money. I could tell he was wavering.
Where'd you get that kind of dough?
It's my mom's emergency stash.
$300, huh?
When'd you need to go?
As soon as possible.
Just us?
And my friend Austin.
What if I bring someone? To help drive.
Who?
Wade.
I hated Wade even more than Mitchell. But if it got me to California sooner, I'd deal with it.
Okay.
What do we do after we're there?
You drop us off and you're done. That's it.
No ride back?
No.
I don't know how long we'll be.
Jack looked over at his car, a restored 1980 Chevy Camaro with a navy blue body and yellow racing stripe. And you want to leave today, huh? As soon as possible. I just need to get some things from my house and pick up Austin. He scratched his stomach, then slowly exhaled. Okay. I'll call Wade. Where do you live? Not far. Over by the 7-Eleven off 13th East. We'll meet you in the 7-Eleven parking lot in an hour. Deal? I reached out my hand, but he just looked at it fearfully. I'm not going to shock you. He took my hand and we shook. Deal. I walked back to the apartment and knocked on Austin's door. We leave in an hour. He looked at me as if I'd spoken in Chinese. Leave? Where? California. Didn't you think I was serious? With Jack? I nodded. Yeah. I purposely didn't say anything about Wade. Austin looked anxious enough without being thrown in the car with his arch enemy. He looked back over his shoulder. Man, my mom's gonna be so chapped at me. She's gonna ground me until I'm 50. Ground you from what? I asked. Homework or clogging? We both knew that Austin pretty much spent all his time in his room anyway. From hanging out with you. Yeah, I said. Well, I wish my mom was around to ground me. I slid my hands in my pockets. Like I said, you don't have to go. I never said I wasn't going, he said. Let me get a few things, I'll be right there. About 10 minutes later, Austin knocked on my apartment door, then let himself in. He had a backpack that was mostly filled with junk food like potato chips and cheese puffs. What did you tell your mom? I told her I was gonna hang out with you. She's gonna be worried out of her skull, I said. She'll probably call the police. I thought of that. I taped a note to your door. It says I went to Comic-Con with you and my uncle. Will she believe that? I don't know, but that's where my uncle is this week. He's so hardcore, he never takes